Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on this Tuesday, November 12th, 2019. Thank you so much for choosing to be with us. So many options out there, and I appreciate you taking the time to dive into the pro wrestling, the sport that we all love, right? And so thank you so much. We're going to get to the Monday Night Raw review in just a moment. But first, I'd like to talk about the sponsor of the show quickly, and that is the truthpodcast.net. With the Great Awakening fully underway comes the only podcast where no topics are off limits. It's the Truth Podcast. Question everything. Discover the truths about topics you were never taught in high school or college. Learn the uncomfortable and inconvenient truths about life, culture, and politics. Now available on all major platforms, including iTunes and Spotify. You can also check them out on social media, on Twitter, at Truth Podcast QE, on Facebook at Truth Podcast QE, on Instagram at, you guessed it, Truth Podcast QE, and as I mentioned at the very beginning here, they do have a website, truthpodcast.net. So check out the Truth Podcast. It is a very intriguing podcast, and I can guarantee you'll be coming back for more. If you love video games, tabletop games, or are generally nerdy, check out cycleanddredge.com and listen to You Died of Dysentery or Nerd Speak. You Died of Dysentery is a weekly podcast that covers a full range of gaming topics, from video games, tabletop games, and everything in between. Do you prefer things like Dungeons & Dragons, Magic, Zombies, Star Wars, or Star Trek? Then listen to Nerd Speak. Nerd Speak is Cycle and Dredge's new all-nerdy show. Subscribe to both You Died of Dysentery and Nerd Speak on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Radio Republic, or anywhere else you find podcasts. Don't forget to visit cycleanddredge.com and enter their monthly giveaways. You can also listen to them directly on the website, too. And, oh yeah, they record live on Discord every Friday night. So don't forget to join their Discord, listen to the live shows, and be a part of the podcast. The Discord link is on the website. Again, it's cycleanddredge.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. And again, I have Zach Smith with me, a patron from patreon.com and longtime patron. Much thank you for the patronage and loyalty to the show and support of the show. And so he was one of the beneficiaries of the special I ran where, hey, you could sign up or up your tier and you could get on the show. And he took advantage of that, and it's much appreciated. And it was a blast talking with him. I mean, he very well spoken, a lot of wrestling knowledge, good chemistry, everything that you're looking for in a guest of the show. And it was a blast, and we'll definitely have to have him back on the show in maybe a semi-regular capacity. We'll see. But if you'd like to get yourself on a Patreon, you head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast, and you can get yourself also on this show for a podcast, and you can get yourself in an ad-free experience where no ads and plugs exist, and it's just a streamless listening experience, or streamlined, I don't know, one of the two words, and it's really a much better listening experience. I subscribe to other podcasts that I am a part of on Patreon, and I get an ad-free experience on those, and trust me, it is just so much easier to listen to, and it's a blast. So I would encourage you to do that, and also head on over to the website where you can listen to the show, but also there's articles. I'm posting articles on a weekly basis from our contributors, our awesome contributors that are publishing on the site on a weekly basis, talking about all forms of wrestling, and not just WWE. I mean, I know that it's the WWE podcast, but there was one that recently just got put up by Nick DeSilva, who had a article today just published on John Moxley and the rebirth of his character. Very well written, and I'd encourage you guys to check that out. So just heads up on the website, and that's pretty much it. You guys know where the rest of the podcast lives: CastBox, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and just like a zillion others. Radio.com as well, which recently got on there. So Alrighty, well, I think that's pretty much it. I'm going to leave the rest of the show to Zach and myself as we cover Raw and his start in wrestling and what brought him to wrestling and a ton of other stuff in between. So here it is. And don't forget, I'll be back tomorrow night with a special guest. Lots of guests this week. So just stay tuned. And we got a lot of shows for you this week that are going to be a blast. So until then, guys, I'll talk to you next time. Alrighty, guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Right now, I am joined by one of the patrons, a very loyal patron, and his name is Zach Smith, or Zachary Smith, depending on which one you'd like to go by. I'm guessing Zach. And he's from Florida, in nice, sunny, warm Florida, where we got, he's sitting and bathing in probably 65, 70, maybe even warmer. We got some snow today up here in upstate New York as winter starts its 10-month-long journey here in upstate New York. And he's a 15-year wrestling fan, so definitely knows this stuff. And right now I'd like to welcome Zach to the show. How you doing?
Matt, I am doing fantastic. I am sitting here in shorts and a sleeveless shirt, Matt. I want you to understand what's going on down here in Florida. I got to enjoy some Monday Night Raw. Enjoy might be a strong word, but again, I do just want to emphasize I don't even need sleeves on the shirt.
Oh, my God. As I'm sitting here, I mean, that's so funny you say that, because right now my wife and I recently moved into an apartment, and the only room that we have available for me to do this without, because the baby's sleeping, is in my garage. I've set up a little studio area, and I am actually wearing a jacket in my garage right now. So that is really funny you mentioned that. So great. Thank you so much for rubbing it in. And anybody, you know, north of Virginia will really appreciate that. Zach, so just let everyone know, kind of introduce yourself as far as, you know, what got you into wrestling and some of your favorite memories.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Well, again, my name is Zach. As you said, I have been a wrestling fan about 15 years on and off. I think what originally got me into it is, as a lot of people, is I was a young kid and I had seen wrestling as a kid, but nothing had really stuck in my head. You and I were talking about it just before the show, and the first thing that I remember was one of the setups to one of the first Elimination Chambers, because I was flipping channels and I heard what I now know to be Edge's theme come on, and I saw Edge come out to the ring, and I saw one of WWE's classic everybody get in the ring and argue but nobody fight segments. And I just thought it was the funniest thing, and it was so interesting, and I didn't know. I knew I was watching wrestling, but I didn't know quite what I was watching, and I kind of got hooked after that, and I would latch on to different things. And then obviously I came in, as we talked about before, right after the Attitude Era. I figure, let's skip all the Stone Cold Rock stuff. Let's really hone in on the Reign of Terror, Triple H stuff. Let's really dig into that and watch a lot of that. So I had to kind of go through that, and had to kind of go through the John Cena years, the early John Cena years, and that was very interesting. And then as we move along, kind of as you obviously get introduced to new favorites. And one day, as a more modern example, I saw Kevin Owens showed up on my screen when John Cena was doing the U.S. Open Invitational. And Kevin Owens is probably my favorite wrestler right now. He showed up with the NXT Championship, and I did not know what that was, because NXT was just this variety show where Daniel Bryan was trained by The Miz somehow. And I got more into NXT, and I started watching NXT religiously and things like that. So I've moved on and on and on, and now obviously with AEW coming along, now I get to watch that as well. And now I feel like my cup runneth over with wrestling, and it feels good to have like real good actual quality wrestling to come where I came from to where we are right now.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's so funny that somebody like yourself who got into wrestling after the Attitude Era, that The Rock and Stone Cold and Vince McMahon and Austin, that whole big feud and all of the insanity that went on from 97 to like 2001, 2002, never really grabbed you and brought you in. But man, when Triple H took the helm and sat atop the throne for like 6 years as world champion, you said, hey, that's my thing right there.
I really got to see a guy pedigree a guy and take 20 seconds to pin him at WrestleMania, on Booker T. That's what really gets into my heartstrings as a wrestling fan.
Yeah. Oh man, that's a match in which, I mean, honestly, I mean, there were so many racial implications with that match. There's so much that is one that I WWE probably wishes they could scrub from the memory of fans. I mean, it's not great, especially with the build and the race undertone of racism throughout that whole storyline. So, so you came in, you're 15 years of a veteran in terms of watching. And now here we are. We've gone through, quote, the dark ages of wrestling where, I mean, there was no farm system anymore. There was no Monday Night Wars. There was no true competition for WWE. Fast forward to 2019, and here we are 7 weeks into an AEW NXT Wednesday Night War rivalry, as it's going on as we speak. And so you mentioned that wrestling seems to be back. I agree with you. And now the NXT storyline is being the main focus of WWE, the central storyline as we get into Survivor Series. So what do you think about the NXT and AEW rivalry and the injection of NXT into the storyline of the main story, which is on SmackDown and Raw? What do you think about all this?
I thought it was really interesting that AEW was going to be going to Wednesdays and was going to be going head-to-head with NXT, because if you told me I could only watch one of the three, it would be WWE brands, it would be NXT. That would be my choice. And when AEW came along, I was immediately on board with it because it is something different. WWE has been complacent for far too long as King of the Castle. And so I made it a point to watch AEW live and then go back for NXT. So it's definitely like it feels like watching your two kids fight each other. But it's so fun to see actual competition again. And this time the competition isn't based on who has the most salacious story as much as it is the story, and the competition is based on wrestling and emotion. And that's really cool. And for NXT, while the circumstances were certainly iffy on why it happened, the fact that SmackDown was literally and figuratively taken over by NXT, not only by superstars and by Triple H and Shawn Michaels, but almost seemingly by the production staff and the decision makers behind the scenes, was so much fun to watch Shayna Baszler show up and then watch Adam Cole go face to face with Daniel Bryan and watch all these superstars who were always kept separate. And that's one of the things that never grabbed me about Survivor Series, is that there were no real implications for it and never really felt special, because Randy Orton can just go RKO Brock Lesnar on the other show because he feels like it. In this case, NXT really feels like it invaded the two shows, and now Survivor Series is the most exciting one to me that it has ever been, because you legitimately have an outside force that's coming in and is a legitimate threat. And I think it's such a cool storyline element that WWE kind of tripped over themselves into finding.
And credit to Triple H. This is the brainchild of Triple H from, as you mentioned, NXT being a complete joke. I mean, I've mentioned before, we all remember the terrible NXT days when you'd hear NXT and it would be laughable because you'd have people running around the ring doing like barrel races and nonsensical crap. And as you said, having The Miz being, apparently training Daniel Bryan, when you think about that now. I mean, it's preposterous. So to go from that laughing stock to what they are today as the brand that almost feels like they're not a part of WWE, which I think really makes it feel that much more special. It just feels so much different than the rest of the product of the quote main roster of Raw and SmackDown, which, as you said, makes it feel like a true invasion. It kind of feels a little bit like WCW ECW invasion back in 2001. I know it kind of predates just barely, but predates when you started watching, but it does feel like an outside entity and, actually coming to invade the enemy territory, even though they're all under the same umbrella of WWE, which you have to remind yourself of, but I don't want to remember that. I mean, they feel like a true outside force, which is awesome. And as you mentioned, Adam Cole, Tommaso Ciampa, all of them, Shayna Baszler on the main show feels awesome. My only concern with all of this is WWE hotshotting this for, not really, or giving away too much, but you know, giving you enough to say, hey, here's who the guys and gals are that are on NXT if you're not watching, which is good advertising in and of itself for their own shows. But maybe you're giving away a little bit too much. And secondly, where does WWE go after Survivor Series and everyone goes back to their own worlds?
That's an interesting question, because on one hand, you do have a lot of people who, for whatever reason, just never bothered to go watch NXT, whether it was because they got a bad taste in their mouth from when it was a variety show, or they marketed it as a developmental. It's called NXT. That's the name of it. And so people haven't checked it out. So if you're going to do this invasion, you almost have to go a little bit too far with how dominant everyone looks, so that you know that, all right, we're done being whatever you think developmental is. We're legitimate superstars. But I do agree, it does present the age-old wrestling problem of, if you and I are going into a pay-per-view, if I beat you up week one, week two, week three, chances are you're beating me at the pay-per-view. That's how wrestling has always worked. So it does kind of make you think that perhaps we're in for a little bit less of that at Survivor Series. And what should happen after the pay-per-view and everybody goes back to their shows is that everybody has been kind of raised up a level because everyone's gotten new exposure against new opponents. If I want to put my I Know WWE hat on, what may likely happen is nothing, because they'll just go back to their own shows. They won't mention it again. And then the NXT people will feel like a bigger deal just because they were on SmackDown. Maybe you'll get a couple more people watching NXT, as they have managed to do in the ratings. But I feel like WWE is just going to separate it, and we're just going to be done with it after Survivor Series.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I think that what they're going to do is, like you said, almost pretend it didn't happen. Because if we all really think about this, and every year I say this, I've been saying this since they implemented this silly brand supremacy. That's what's on the line. I mean, like, this brand supremacy that just supersedes any personal rivalry, anything that's going on. Everyone just bands together because they're fighting for their brand, even though they didn't choose to be on that brand. They were drafted there and were told that's where you're going. Suddenly, everybody puts all of this aside and says, nope. I am, you know, I'm red, I'm blue, I'm black and gold, and that's what I am for life. I mean, NXT, right. I can buy a little bit more
yes.
as to, you know, them being loyal to their brand. Whereas Raw and SmackDown, it's just a concocted, forced rivalry that comes up every year, and all of all these enemies that are, you know, at each other's throats and for the other, you know, 11 months. Well, hold on, guys. Let's just stop and think about what we're doing here. We've got a brand to uphold. Well, why? It's just like having a Hell in a Cell match just built into the schedule. Why?
Right.
You know, they always have to have gimmicks, but they don't step back to think, why are we doing this if it's not, there's nothing on the line other than bragging? I wanted to just call it the bragging rights pay-per-view again. I'm going to enjoy it for what it is. If it wasn't for NXT, this would probably be a much more negative feeling that I have. But NXT being involved, I think, is really, the focus is NXT here. The problem that I have, and you alluded to it a little bit, is, and I'm concerned about it, if NXT continues to dominate as they have week after week since their invasion, I'm concerned that at Survivor Series, somebody from NXT is taking the fall, and they're just going to go. And again, they'll be elevated from just being exposed and get new viewers. But I'm worried that they take the fall, and all of this was for naught.
That's true. And the only thing that does make me feel better is, in a lot of these matches, it is just marketed as Shayna Baszler, Becky Lynch, Bayley. The three champions are facing each other. There aren't titles on the line, which makes me feel better in that you can have Shayna pin Bayley to win that match and everyone still keeps their titles. That does give me some hope in the fact that, you know, maybe Roderick Strong steals a victory over AJ Styles in their match, or even if AJ Styles beats Roderick Strong, at least Roderick Strong stays NXT North American champion. Like, there's still ways out of this where you could keep your superstars looking strong, especially in triple threat matches where they've had a couple now, where you can have them steal victories, NXT can still look stronger and your brand doesn't look weaker. I just hope that that's the way that they look at it.
Yeah, very well. I mean, I think you're right. The fact that this is really like, and as you said, there's no championships really in the line here. It's just, it's all about brand supremacy. Everyone's keeping their belts. Everyone's going to stay champion through at least TLC, which is the next pay-per-view. And then we're on to the true road to WrestleMania starting January 1st. So after Survivor Series, we all know it's just a cyclical lull. Typically, there's just a lull in, like, okay, it's the holidays, it's Thanksgiving, Christmas is here. Let's ramp this up after after January hits. So, all right, well, moving on a little bit from the NXT storyline, which I think is a real highlight in seeing these guys and gals, is just awesome. It feels new. It feels fresh. Something that may not feel so new and fresh, although that, you know, maybe you feel differently, is the Lana Rusev and Bobby Lashley storyline that continued to evolve this past week, with Lana cutting her promo that really got booed in Manchester pretty hard and deservedly, at least in my opinion. So I'm not going to dive too much deeper into it. I want to hear your thoughts about this whole thing and what happened this past Monday.
I just feel like Rusev and Lana and Bobby Lashley are all very talented performers. And I would have thought that in a company with so many writers and so many wrestling minds, you could come up with something better than he's a sex addict, I'm pregnant, well, no, you're not, well, no, I'm not, how dare you? And then that just leads to a beatdown. Like, every week the story has just been, oh no, they're coming out, something stupid is going to happen. And it's just, wrestling is a soap opera anyway, but at least a soap opera that's can be about a championship. Whoever wins this, whatever this is not going to look better coming out of it. When Rusev is victorious over the evil Bobby Lashley and finally swoops Lana off of her feet and plants her with a kiss on the ramp as pyro goes off, I'm not going to be thinking, oh, what a hero. I'm going to be thinking, all right, well, I mean, you did this with Dolph Ziggler too, so this seems to be kind of a pattern, so like maybe you guys should work on some stuff. Like, this is not good for anybody, I don't feel like, and I just feel like there's better stuff you could be doing with these people other than like a rehashed, trashy storyline that it doesn't seem like anybody cares about. And you're right, they did boo it out of the building, and that's exactly what they should have done, because nothing is happening. It's a placeholder because your show's too long.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I need to make sure that I don't cuss on my own show. It's like, I mean, seriously, like, I understand what they're trying to do. WWE has been trying to run from their own identity of being a professional wrestling company, and I've said that forever, that they are, whether they like it or not. They've been running from their own identity for as long as I can remember, because they're almost ashamed to be a wrestling company, and they will say that they're not. So they throw in this entertainment nonsense that is Vince McMahon's brainchild, and creative does it because they say, hey, we have to please Vince. We don't really want to, you know, we want to please Vince, not necessarily that is also going to align with what the fans actually want. So this is clearly a Vince McMahon special. I mean, this is clearly from Vince. So this isn't the worst thing Vince has ever done. I mean, I'm sure you've heard me say that. This isn't the worst thing. It's not. We can think of many things that are worse, but this is starting to tank pretty quick. I mean, it's starting to get down there now on my, you know, top 20 of the worst things Vince McMahon's ever come up with. And I think the worst part about this is not necessarily the idea of this story, because I know what they're going for. It's the execution that has been very, very poor, because it doesn't even make sense for this, because we start at 100 miles an hour of all of a sudden Bobby Lashley and Lana are making out. Then they're, you know, publicly flaunting her own adultery on national television. And then she says he's a sex addict, but he's not. But then he is. And then she said Rusev wanted to get her pregnant, but that's not what happened. But then this past Monday she said she's pregnant, but that all ended up being a lie. They're all over the damn place. I don't even know what they're saying or doing. And Rusev looks like a fool for sticking with somebody who you have to force or try to convince to be with you, which is reverse logic. Think about anybody that's been in a real relationship in real life. If you have to try to convince somebody to be with you, odds are you probably should just let them go. I mean, and furthermore, Bobby Lashley, is he some kind of hypnotist? If he says that Lana or that Rusev cheated on Lana, shouldn't Lana, you know, say, hey, Rusev, is this true? Instead of just assuming and then going off and doing her own thing. This whole thing makes no sense. Rusev looks like a fool for sticking with her for so long. And as you said, yeah, he's probably going to beat Bobby Lashley, but what does he gain from it? Just, oh, he proved he's the alpha male and he beat Bobby, so now he wants Lana back? Why would you want Lana back after years of being with her and you marry the woman and she fakes a pregnancy to just have as a setup for Bobby to attack you? This whole thing, I would love to sit down with a creative and Vince and say, like, what are we doing here? Like, I don't know the end game. I assume the end game is Rusev beats Bobby Lashley and we move on with our lives. And I hope that that WWE puts all of us out of our misery at Survivor Series. And the only thing that's going to elevate everyone is just this storyline being over.
Pal, it's funny because he's making out with his wife. That's creative.
Yeah.
Pardon my poor Vince impression, but it couldn't possibly be anything other than Vince thought it would be really, really funny to have Bobby Lashley make out with Lana because he knows that wrestling fans know that Rusev and Lana are really married. I can't possibly think of what in-game there could be beyond, oh, what a great moment it'll be, which it won't. It'll just be a, okay, great, we're done here.
And Vince McMahon has a history of this kind of thing with, and I think this still predates you just by a little bit as well, but maybe you've seen it. Vince McMahon making out with Trish Stratus in front of his own wife.
Yeah.
So, like, Vince has a history of doing this.
It's one of his favorite things. It's one of his weird favorite things to do.
Yes, it's almost as if we're getting an actual glimpse into Vince McMahon's mind, which is not a place that I like to stay very long.
No, so I don't like it. I like it a lot.
It's a little disturbing, and this is, again, this is like, it's like Vince McMahon woke up and, you know, had a dream about this and said, damn it, this would be great stuff. I mean, it just feels like Vince. So, yeah, I'm done with it. And before I continue down this bad road, I'm going to move on. Seth Rollins. Now, Seth Rollins this past week went from potentially from last week with Triple H coming out and saying, I know what your next move is, Seth. Why don't you come join NXT? To this week being the flag holder for Raw and having a rallying cry for Raw to, you know, no, this is my home. This is where I'm staying. And suddenly he's the rah-rah Monday Night Rollins guy that is back and he's on a mission and I don't know. So the crowd still, if you notice, and I'm sure you have, not really behind Seth. Seth's in some trouble in terms of babyface character. I mean, he hasn't really had a whole lot of support after facing The Fiend because, hey, the people love The Fiend. He's impossible to turn heel. The people love The Fiend. Then you put him against NXT guys. He's going to get booed because NXT is the shiny new toy. It's cool. The NXT guys feel like a true third brand. So WWE's not doing themselves any favors. And then he goes this week against Walter, an NXT UK champion. When they're in the UK, are they purposely trying to turn him heel? Are they not? Like, what the heck is going on with Seth Rollins, do you think?
If you had taken all of the words out of the entire segment and you had just told me that he's going to face somebody from the UK in the UK, it would have made sense to me that they're turning him heel. However, it doesn't make sense to me that last week they did all this, come back to NXT, your next move, your future could be your past. Every time I haven't known what to do, I've been able to show you and him being tempted by it. I don't understand why he was able to find this resolve in a week, but he wasn't able to find it in a day. The story would have made sense to me if we had stayed with the theme of last week. All it took was that speech. And then he said, if I come back to NXT, I'm coming back as a top guy against Adam Cole. I want the title match. Then he gets screwed out of the title match, and I could understand if next week he comes out and starts to turn heel, but his rah-rah, I'm a Raw guy speech doesn't make sense with that unless somehow he's going to turn heel at the pay-per-view, which is just going to be odd. I mean, I guess that would be better. He's going to get booed anyway. You might as well go with it. But this rah-rah speech and then having him face an NXT UK champion, doesn't help you with what it looks like you're trying to do. And again, if you want to turn him heel at the pay-per-view, fine, go ahead. But he's not a babyface right now in terms of his reactions anyway. So when he turns, he's really just going to get cheered, which is going to have the opposite effect of what you guys want anyway. So you could just start the process now. It's not going to make any difference at what point you do it.
That's a good point. I mean, if he's going to join NXT, which many people are speculating, and as you said, this rah, rah, rah thing is all of a sudden, like a week later, yeah, that, you know, last week didn't fire him up at Triple H, and he didn't know where his loyalties were last week, and suddenly he had this just epiphany of, no, I'm with Raw, damn it. I mean, like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And if he's going to join NXT, you're exactly right. People are going to cheer that because why? NXT is the cool brand. NXT is like it's the internal ECW, or it's the internal AEW, rather. ECW is probably not the right analogy. It's the internal promotion that doesn't feel like part of the promotion, so it's the cool brand. So they're not going to get the heel reaction unless they're trying to turn him on Raw, which is going to actually turn him babyface. It depends on, but they have to see this coming, if that's going to be the plan. I mean, that's an if. I don't know if it's going to be.
Yeah, they would have to see it. They would have to see it coming, and at this point it would seem like their real only plan is we have to stop sending him out there and getting him booed, and then all he does is say, I'm going to burn it down, redesign, rebuild, reclaim, be Slayer, blah, 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 and then he's just getting booed out of the building, but we're still pushing him as our John Cena, our Roman Reigns, two other examples that didn't work. And him just getting booed out of the building. If he goes to NXT, people will cheer it because, one, he's a heel, which is what he's better at anyway. NXT has better wrestling. Every time Seth Rollins is wrestling, he gets the crowd back, and he'll have a better opportunity to do that. So if that's what you want to do, be my guest. That'll work great. But what you have to stop doing is running your head into a brick wall and expecting it to stop hurting.
That's a hilarious visual. I really think yes. So Seth Rollins, you made me think of something. He's kind of like a lost puppy in that he doesn't have a direction. I don't know what Seth Rollins is. I don't know what he stands for. I don't understand what his mission is. He's this guy that he's one of the best wrestlers in the world, and I really believe that. He's really good in the ring. That's never been the question. But he feels like I just don't know what the Seth Rollins character is. He just comes up with these slogans of Monday Night Rollins. Okay, cute. Well, I mean, like, you know, how many times do wrestlers put their own name in the name of the show? I mean, it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you have him, like you said, he's going to burn it down. And he just throws that in every time. But what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? I don't know what are we just supposed to assume that means you're going to, you know, have a great match, or you're going to beat your opponent? Are you going to, I mean, I don't know what these slogans and these catchphrases mean other than, hey, it sounds cute. It goes great with a t-shirt. I just don't have a real strong connection with the Rollins character because I don't know who and what he is. And, you know, maybe it's because he's flip-flopped so many times, and I'm not saying babyface to face to babyface, just in the direction of his character from, I don't know if I can beat the Fiend. I mean, I'm just going to sit and cower in the corner every time he comes out, but yet I can beat Brock Lesnar. I beat Braun Strowman. You know, I beat Triple H. I'm the King Slayer, the Monster Slayer, and the Beast Slayer, but I'm going to sit in the corner like, you know, I'm a five-year-old scared of a Halloween mask. And it just makes no sense with that. And I think that did him damage. The Becky Lynch storyline did a lot of damage to him because it was that was terrible on-screen chemistry. And I'm sure they're great outside. I'm sure they're great. They clearly, you know, they're engaged, for God's sakes. I'm sure off-camera they're great, but boy, oh boy, when that red light came on, it was terrible with Becky and Rollins.
So. Yeah, it was bad.
All right, well.
Yeah, it was bad, and I think it also is just that, man, some guys aren't built to go out and do 20-minute promos by themselves. He's one of those guys that's not built to do that. He's built to be a great in-ring performer. He's built to be a heel that cowers behind other people. And he's built to be a guy that makes you want to see him get beat up. And when you turn him into this babyface conquering hero, and the WWE thinks that comes along with big 20, 30-minute speeches, He can't do that. You're not going to invest in his character. And then when he wrestles, you're going to, so they're going to think everything's fine. And they need to figure that out, but they haven't seemed to yet.
And there's still time. And again, you know, for yourself and for others who have listened to me, I think the best solution is just have him go away for a month and a half, maybe even 2 months. Come back in time as, you know, a surprise entrant into the Royal Rumble, or somebody else came up with that. I'm just running with that. But it's a great solution. Just have him go away, because the fans right now are kind of starting to gather momentum of turning on Seth Rollins. And if that's not your goal, then I would jump ship right now, because the fans are really, really starting to sink Rollins' ship. And it's happening more, a little more every week, a little more every week. And before you know it, you're going to have a Roman Reigns situation on your hands that I don't think they want again. And I don't want it either, because I think Seth has a lot more potential. But right now we need to learn how to miss him. He needs to go away for a couple of months. And I'm fine with it. I really think Raw will be just fine. You know, give talent a new opportunity, new talent, more time. So that's my solution, unless you want to turn him fully heel, which, I mean, I think he's awesome as a heel. I mean, I think he's better as a heel than a babyface, but if that's not your goal, I'd give him some time off.
Absolutely. He's 100% better as a heel, but if, like you said, if that is not your goal, the easiest way to get people to like somebody is to make us miss them. Have them go away. Perfect solution. Have him come back at the Rumble. Everyone will forget for a time. But in that time that he's gone, you better have figured out what you misstepped on before, or we're just going to have this problem on a couple Raws after WrestleMania. So that would be my only solution as well.
Exactly. And one more thing I'll point out with this, and then we'll move on with the Rollins thing, is this has been proven with Seth Rollins before. When Seth Rollins had the knee injury before WrestleMania, and he missed WrestleMania, and he left as a really hot heel, had to give up the championship, and then comes back at Extreme Rules in 2016, I think it was, and then the crowd lost their minds over it. They were ready to cheer Rollins, and what did they do? They flipped him heel. It was one of the worst decisions. I said at the time that was a terrible decision, and it still reams true today that was the time to switch him. They had a whole bunch of time and months and months and months to hate him. He left, he came back, the fans missed him, forgot all the heinous things he did and how much he hated him, and realized, man, this guy's really good and I miss him. The same thing happened with Triple H in 2002. He left as a really hot heel. He left in 8 months, came back in Madison Square Garden, got the biggest pop he's ever had in his entire career. I mean, so look at the history of this, and it will deem true. So, all right, well, moving on to something else here, and I wanted to touch from Monday Night Raw on the, as I'm going down my, I went through Rollins here. I'm trying not to go into anything negative here. The OC versus Randy Orton, Ricochet, and Humberto Carrillo. Before I give my thoughts on it, what did you think, not just about this match, but also the Humberto Carrillo focus that WWE has really just laid it on thick with Humberto, and I'm not complaining about it, but they've really just kind of cherry-picked this guy and said, you're going to be wrestling Daniel Bryan, or you're going to be wrestling all these top guys the next month. What's all this about, and what did you think about the match?
That is interesting that they've done that. The match itself was interesting. I mean, it's kind of just another in the series of, well, here comes Survivor Series, so here are some of the participants, and, you know, it's kind of that, and that's fine, and taking it for what it is, it's usually just a fun way for guys to show off some of their high spots and some of their finishers, and the RKO is always fun, so it's probably going to be in there somewhere. Humberto Carrillo is interesting because I saw him a couple times on 205 Live, and I thought he was really good, but I never, ever thought that when he got drafted to Raw, I thought he was just going to be on a couple of matches that performed better than expected. Maybe he'd get on a pay-per-view pre-show. I didn't think he would ever wrestle Seth Rollins in the main event of Raw. This feels very much like a Paul Heyman kind of project, where it's something where they see something in him where he can be one of the next guys, and they're in a situation where maybe they feel like they need to start building on their main brands. They need to start building more stars, but it definitely does feel like they are focused right now on Humberto Carrillo. But interestingly, they've put him in these situations, but he hasn't really won. And at a certain point, if he is going to be that guy, it's not going to be enough to be like, well, Humberto Carrillo took him to the limit tonight, but he just came up short. I mean, eventually, if you want him to be that guy, he's going to have to start winning these matches. But, I mean, he's definitely got all the skills you would ever want in somebody to be put in that position. He's got some personality stuff to figure out, and he'll obviously either need a manager or something like Andrade would. But I mean, I'm certainly not mad at it. Just kind of came out of nowhere. And I mean, like I said, if you are going to do it, you're eventually going to have to start really doing it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think he is going to have to start winning some matches, and, you're right. I just don't know if he needs to start winning matches against the top guys on Raw. I mean, I agree that maybe he can get like a roll up victory or something. And as you said, taking them to the limit, that's one of the announcer's favorite sayings, one of many that they have that they just recycle every single week. Yep. And that is true. And he has put on a really good showing. He has shown that he's a player. He has shown that he belongs. And I think that's the message that is being sent here. Not necessarily that he's ready to compete at that level in terms of just shot into the main event, which I don't think is the right thing to do. And I don't think they do either. It was just a way to say, hey, we're establishing this guy, not just slowly, you know, bringing him up, but saying, boom, he could compete at this level. He just needs a little bit more time. So I'm okay if he doesn't get any victories at that level, beating AJ Clean or beating Brian Clean yet. They're just saying, you know what I mean? So that's my only thing. And as far as this match goes from Monday Night Raw, I'm fine with it. I mean, Orton, Ricochet, and Carrillo defeated the OC, and, I mean, that's fine. Orton here was the interesting wild card of he RKO'd Ricochet, which, by the way, that was a couple of weeks. Was that last week or the week before? I can't remember. Did you see the RKO that he gave to Ricochet?
Oof.
That was the single, and I've seen hundreds of RKOs, the single most like scariest RKO I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was I didn't understand how Ricochet did it. I didn't understand how it happened. I didn't understand how he wasn't dead.
I just said, okay, here comes the X sign from the referees going up. You know, they're going to bring medic. I mean, like, I just don't know how in the hell that he didn't end up at the very minimum, you know, straining a tendon in his neck or, you know, like some kind of small muscle tear in his neck. Not, you know, of course, notwithstanding a broken freaking neck, you know, as Kurt Angle would say. I mean, so like that was absolutely amazing. But as far as him teaming with Orton, it was kind of weird. I mean, considering that he did that to him a week or two before then, I just chalked it up to whatever. It's Survivor Series season and everything. Yeah. All personal rivalries go out the window. Fine. But the match itself was good. And as I said, I could see Orton being a final stay in his Survivor Series team. Randy Orton has a knack for winning Survivor Series matchups in elimination matchups. If you look at the history of Randy Orton in his Survivor Series history, he has, you know, been the last one or the last couple of competitors on his team almost every time that he's been there. So Randy Orton has a good history. I expect him to do, you know, two or three or four RKOs out of nowhere. This isn't really a prediction show, but I could see Randy Orton being a big player there. And I Orton, from what I have seen, has also signed a five-year extension with WWE, so AEW can, you know, stop pursuing him if they were even doing that to begin with. And I don't know. So right now, Ricochet is the younger guy. Humberto Carrillo, as we were talking about originally, is also a much younger talent, which is the focus of WWE, and I'm fine with that too. You know, going back to my first statement, if they're going to establish a new star and they need to have a guy come close but not just making it yet, that's fine, because I am all about building new stars. Fans need to be patient, and unfortunately in today's gotta-have-it-now age, people aren't that patient, which gets people, who is this guy? I don't know him. Well, everyone has to start from nobody knowing him to, you know, all the way to stardom. That's just how it happens. So if this is nothing more than trying to build a new star, hey, I'm all on board for it.
Absolutely, and that's what Survivor Series is often for. That's how we got The Rock. He started as Rocky Maivia. That's how we got a lot of guys. It always sets up, if you're going to have a last surviving member, generally it's going to be a young guy. That's why Randy Orton has been one of those guys before. And now with Randy Orton signed in that multi-year deal, now he's worked with Mustafa Ali a few times. It seems like what he's interested in doing now is working with the young guys and kind of putting them over, you know, still accumulating victories, but making them look good. And I think that's a great role for him because he's great in the ring. And if he's a more relaxed, not stupid version of Randy Orton, then I will absolutely take that in that division. And eventually all of these stars you're building up will break through, and then the entire brand will be better for it. And if this is the starting point of that, fantastic. Let's do it.
I couldn't say it better. I mean, that's just it. It's about building new stars. It will always be about building stars. That's what draws money in any sport you can ever think of. I mean, when you think of baseball, you think of, you know, legends, Derek Jeter and Mickey Mantle and Babe Ruth. You think of basketball, you think of LeBron James, you know, you think of all these stars. And so that's what will always draw money, is stars. And that is the same thing for professional wrestling, even more so with pro wrestling. Moving on to, and this really, I don't even know honestly what to say about this because there's not a lot to say other than it was Eric Rowan versus, there was a local competitor.
What happened? Tell us what happened, Matt.
Eric Rowan was backstage using some kind of baby talk directed at somebody or something. He carried a cloaked cage to the ring and he set the announce table. He made pretty quick work of it. He ended it with the Iron Claw and left with his cage. So I don't know what this is. I'm really trying to reserve a little bit of judgment here until we get what's revealed to the ring. I honestly don't know. This is and maybe that's the point, that there's always there should be more questions than answers with storylines because it keeps you coming back and wanting more, of which WWE has very little of sometimes. But this, it's weird, and it's hard to judge it other than this better be not the, you know, some kind of awful payoff. But I don't have a lot of faith in the writing team. What I don't even know what to say. What did you think?
Matty, baby talked of Cage. I don't know. What could possibly take your best, fondest memories of wrestling and life and all of it? What can you put in that cage that would be awesome and great and exciting? Or even like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Because the best I can give you, Matt, is, boy, I hope it's not a real baby. That's what I got for you.
If it's a, I don't even want to. Oh my God! If it's, Matt, I don't, in the PG era, man.
Matt, you know it might be a real baby. Don't come on.
It can't be. It can't be. There is just no way. You would have activist groups and you would have so many sponsors calling WWE and losing their minds. If this was 1999, 1998, maybe, but this is bizarre.
It's so weird. I can usually kind of think of it in terms of, all right, what could this be? I literally have zero guesses as to what in the world this is or is going to be or anything. I got nothing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we could sit here and come up with stupid stuff, but whenever this is revealed to be, I'm not even excited to really see what it is because I'm sure that it's going to be something that is a letdown or makes no sense or just goes into some bizarre storyline again with Eric Rowan deciding to, you know, just out of nowhere, try to commit a vehicular homicide on somebody. And then, yeah, just this thing, I don't know. I'm going to reserve as much judgment as I can until I see what it is. And maybe they'll surprise me, but I'm going to move on here. The Viking Raiders versus Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster. So the Viking Raiders won by pinfall. Pretty quick match here. They caught Andrews running with the Viking Experience. I mean, I'm okay with I'm okay with it from this perspective. At least the Viking Raiders, oh, you know, the Raw Tag Team Champions, got a little bit of TV time, and that's insane to say as champions, but at least they're on the minds of WWE to say at least give them 5 minutes, which is a shame, but it's also, you know, hey, better than nothing. So it's hard to judge this match because it was so quick. What do you think about the Viking Raiders here? I mean, getting the victory, but moreover, as Raw Tag Team Champions.
I mean, match was interesting only because it was more competitive than I would have thought it would have been, just thinking about who the teams were. Viking Raiders as Tag Team Champions, I wish that I could say that, like, that they're like a disappointing championship team, or they're not meeting an expectation, or they're frankly, they're a surprising team, but it's always been a theme of the WWE where they just don't value tag teams as they do singles wrestlers, and they don't value tag team championships. So a lot of times you'll have things like this where a team will get very hot for a minute, and then it kind of turns into this where, oh, here's the tag team champions for a minute, and they have a squash tag match because they don't think they have enough teams. And this always kind of happens where your championship team is almost your least relevant team somehow. It's like they're working backwards from the champions. And this is about what you would expect from a WWE tag team, unfortunately.
It is. I hate to say I'm surprised because I'm not. I mean, when they originally won, I was surprised. I was a little bit hesitant to accept them as champions, but they kind of won me over. Their match that they had to win it was awesome. And they had some momentum behind them. And what did WWE do the next week? All but forgotten. I mean, it's just one of those things that once they get to the destination and they do a turn, or like with Bayley turning heel or Sasha turning heel, they just have no follow up. There's nothing to follow through with, and that's honestly more important than the turn itself or the win itself, is how do you follow up to continue this or explain this more or keep the momentum going? It's just, oh, we got to the destination. Our job's done here. Hands up. Everybody, you know, time's up. It doesn't make any sense that why, and we just see this consistent booking strategy over and over and over. So, I mean, I know that they have a match at Survivor Series, which is good, again, against the New Day, which was SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and the Undisputed Era of Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, the NXT Tag Team Champions. So, I mean, that's good that they're getting that exposure, but I have a very sneaking suspicion that they are going to be the ones to take the pinfall, probably for the Undisputed Era.
100%. Yeah, they're definitely, of the three teams, they're the most take-the-fall-able of those teams. And on the plus side, that should be a really good match, and the Viking Raiders should get to show off that they are a really, really, really good tag team in the ring. So that would be the plus showing there. So hopefully, even in a defeat that will inevitably happen, they're able to show that, no, we can actually go. And if you give us a chance to actually go in the ring, we can get some stuff done. That'll be the only takeaway I think that you're going to be able to have from what they're going to be able to do based on what they're given.
They are there, as you said, and I would say, as Jim Ross always says, maximize your minutes. And I think that they need to maximize every second that they're in that ring, because they know that they are the ones that are the not necessarily unknowns, but the ones that probably have the least name brand value out of all of these teams. They need to have a good showing. If they end up taking a loss but end up elevating themselves with the performance, then that's a win. So I'm okay with that if that's going to be the goal and if that actually happens in execution. So a couple of things I want to talk to you about, and then we'll kind of wrap this up here. What do you think so far about Brock Lesnar and Rey Mysterio? I know that Brock Lesnar, I mean, God knows he wasn't going to make the trip over to the UK. what do you think about this storyline so far? And, well, the hell with it. What do you think is going to happen at Survivor Series?
Rey is going to die at Survivor Series. That was easy. It's been kind of an interesting story, though. I mean, when Brock attacked Rey and Dominic for, it seemed like it was 10 minutes straight, I didn't think that that was going to go anywhere. I thought that that was just going to get dropped. And then Cain Velasquez came out took his shirt off and looked like, as I just listened to one of your co-hosts, ex-boyfriends with his shirt off. And then he lost at Crown Jewel, so that was fun. Glad we wasted time on that. And now when Brock was looking for Ray, and then on Raw, Ray took the chair to him again, and Ray actually showed some fire. I'm really enjoying how fired up Ray is and how fired up it's making Brock and Paul Heyman. They clearly care about it. So I think it will be a good match. I just, you know, I know that Ray's not winning the WWE Championship from Brock, but I mean, I've really enjoyed the build to it so far, and that's really all I can ask. I don't know who else they were going to put in front of Brock first, and at least this one isn't just somebody trying to climb the Brock Mountain. It's somebody that got attacked by Brock, and you know Dominic is going to figure in some way into the match, and it'll be a fun kind of ragdoll kind of David and Goliath thing, and it'll be, you know, fun building toward it as we go into the pay-per-view itself.
Yeah, it will be. That's also a good point, because Brock Lesnar's matches that he has so far have been kind of very formulaic. I mean, yeah. It's just been kind of, can I slay the beast? And, you know, Seth Rollins was the one, and Roman Reigns, to really slay the beast. And it's very formulaic and, you know, mildly successful. I wouldn't call any of Brock Lesnar's programs outstanding and, you know, absolutely memorable. Right. And this one has a different feel to it, because it's not necessarily about conquering Brock Lesnar. There's a deeper emotional feeling for this. There's an emotional connection with Rey Mysterio and his son, who were attacked, and, you know, he attacked his son, and he had to watch his son be attacked, and he couldn't help him. And then Mysterio brings in Cain Velasquez, as you said, which was, we all know, just what the F is this.
Right.
And so, yeah, this one has more heart to it. This one has, like, a more of a story than the rest of them just kind of, okay, we're going to see if I can beat Brock, and how many suplexes am I going to get? And, I mean, this one has more, even though, like you said, the outcome is beyond predictable. You just can't, I can't imagine Rey Mysterio winning this for any reason in storyline at all. I think there's no reason that Rey Mysterio should win this match. None. Zero. So Brock Lesnar wins, and Rey Mysterio shows some fight, have a couple of hope spots. Hopefully it's not a 9-second Kofi loss, and we, you know, Rey Mysterio shows fight, and I think that they will. I don't think that they can go the 9-second road again, and yeah, Dominic will show up and probably get F5'd. So, I mean, yeah, again, this is a kind of an early prediction, a couple weeks out, but that's my thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about Becky Lynch and Bayley and Shayna Baszler? I mean, what do you well, first of all, I know that this was last week on Raw, and this week it was not so much a Shayna and Becky Lynch story, but what I have to ask, what you thought about that promo between Shayna Baszler and Becky Lynch last week?
Yeah, I really know how to pick my Patreon spots, don't I, with my Raw. the Becky Lynch Shayna sit down was really interesting to watch, because you have really Shayna is the first person I can think of off the top of my head that matches Becky Lynch with her same kind of energy. Like Sasha, it was just very confident and had a bravado, but Shayna Baszler has like the same kind of swagger with a little bit of a harder edge than Becky does. And I thought it was just fantastic the way that they were able to go back and forth and play off of each other. So I think it made me want to see them fight immediately, and it did its job perfectly in that I'm already ready to see that match. And adding Bayley to it, with everything that Bayley has been able to do with her character, and she's changed a bit in the ring, and she can provide a lot of good promo material too. I think that with everything that you've built so far with the characters that you have, I think that adding Shayna in with Becky is like a really special mixture that they should use here, and then get them away from each other and bring them back together later, because I feel like this is a special kind of two performer deal where you don't have them fight at like three pay-per-views in a row, because I feel like you have something special there.
You do. WWE knows it. We know it. You could see it. It's one of those things. Those are one of those moments that do not come along often, that don't just happen, at least on paper. It's one of those, like, when they're writing the promo, they probably didn't expect it to come out as awesome as it did in execution. Right. It felt like, hey, I need to see these two go one-on-one. And we're getting a triple threat, and I'm fine. I'm fine with that because I don't need to see matches that I want so bad right now. I'm willing to let things burn and build, and that, I think, is a match that's going to happen. So one last thing I wanted to talk to you about as we're running a little bit out of time here. We never talked about the very first match of the night, which was awesome. I loved it. It was the WWE Tag Team Champions, Kabuki Warriors versus Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. So what did you think about this match? It went on pretty long. I think it was almost 20 minutes long. But, hey, I'll take that over a 20-minute promo any day. So what did you think?
I will absolutely take that over a 20-minute promo. Kabuki Warriors became super interesting all of a sudden, huh? And I think this is a good example of a lot of times wrestling fans will say if a team or a character is boring, and usually that's a babyface, they'll say just turn them heel. And a lot of times that doesn't work. But I think what fans really mean is turn them heel, give them an edge, and give them something interesting. In this case, Asuka has now the Green Mist, which is an awesome throwback that's super interesting, and they both become so much more vicious and fun to watch in the ring. And then to have Becky Lynch and Charlotte on the other side, you now have four great workers in the ring. Please absolutely give them 20 minutes to open the show, and then put over your women's tag team champions, because that's what you should be doing if they are the tag team. It would always bug me when two single stars would just be thrown together and then beat the tag team champions who have been tagging together. I love the heel turn. I love the Mist. I love everything about them now. I love them turning on Paige, who is just an absentee manager for them. I love everything that they've been doing, and absolutely, give me a match any day of the week over a promo to start a show, and give me a 20-minute match that's that good. I will absolutely take it.
This was outstanding. I mean, there was a great tone to start the show. It held my attention, and the crowd was into it. Mm-hmm. The Kabuki Warriors, as you mentioned, have really reinvented themselves from kind of, oh, hey, Paige is suddenly taking the credit for putting these two together, doesn't show up, and then complains of when they turn on her because, again, Paige has nothing to do with them being together. But nonetheless, you have, yes, Asuka with the green mist and the green eye paint with the green tears. Awesome stuff. Just, I mean, the little touches like that, the way that they face each other, and it's also giving what's the other one's name? Kyrie Sane. Jeez, Kyrie Sane.
Yep.
Kyrie Sane. It's also giving her exposure. She had an amazing match with Becky Lynch just a few weeks ago on Monday Night Raw, and she shows it again here. She really is getting and fitting nicely in from NXT up on the, quote, main roster here, if we're even referring to it as that anymore. Yeah. But this was a match that I think elevated all competitors. The Kabuki Warriors winning was the right move, because the Kabuki Warriors have been kind of on a losing streak as of late. I'm fine with it. It was a really strong opener. The story made sense. Having Kairi Sane doing those chops to Charlotte's chest was kind of weird. There was that spot in the beginning when she was trying to chop Charlotte, and she's just standing there, and then Charlotte, you know, hits her with a chop, and she goes down. And yeah. I mean, fine, it's a little bit hokey, but I get the premise.
Yeah.
So yes, putting these two together has been extremely successful. What I would like to see is a long, long women's tag team run, championship run for these two. That's what I need for these two. So, awesome way to start the show. Becky and Charlotte being together, it's better than them facing each other, because we've seen that, God knows, more than enough. And we'll eventually get back to that program, but I'm fine with it. And having the Kabuki Warriors win was the right move. A-plus way to start the show.
Yeah, keep Charlotte and Becky away from each other for the opposite reason of Becky and Shayna. I just don't want to see it anymore. I'm all set on that. And yeah, I keep the Kabuki Warriors together. Let them work with all kinds of different teams and all kinds of different people. Let them put people over while they maintain a winning streak, because that's what they should do as women's tag team champions. Let them go out there and do that and show what they can do. To this point, there has not really been a point of these women's tag team championship. It kind of feels like he just threw it out there to have a new thing well, now that they're here, actually do something with them and let them be elevated by two people who are really freaking good in the ring and can really do something with them. It was perfect match last night. Now all you got to do is maintain it. You could do it on Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. They can show up wherever. You have built-in great match prospects everywhere around. All you have to do is use them.
It's easier said than done, but yes, that is the actual, yes, that is the true solution. So, all right, well, Zach, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. It's really been a blast. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. You're very well spoken and a great guest, and we'll have to do this again. But before we go, of course, I want to let everyone know, if you'd like, to share any social media or ways that they can follow you.
You can follow me at Twitter at ThePride904, also on YouTube at The904, sir. That is it for me.
All right. Awesome. Well, you enjoy your shift tonight. I know you got to work, and I've got to go to sleep. So and get out of this cold garage, as my hands are. I literally have a one of those space heaters next to me. It's just insane. So, as you sit there with.
I gotta turn my fan up. It's a little warm in here.
Son of a it's just awesome. New York is great. No, you should come visit. It's a wonderful place. All right, Zach. Well, thanks so much, and we'll definitely be in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you, Matt.
All right. Take care.
All right, you too.
All right. Bye. But first, I'd like to talk about the sponsor of the show quickly, and that is the truthpodcast.net. With the Great Awakening fully underway comes the only podcast where no topics are off limits. It's the Truth Podcast. Question everything. Discover the truths about topics you were never taught in high school or college. Learn the uncomfortable and inconvenient truths about life, culture, and politics. Now available on all major platforms, including iTunes and Spotify. You can also check them out on social media, on Twitter, at truthpodcastqe. On Facebook at Truth Podcast QE, on Instagram at, you guessed it, Truth Podcast QE, and as I mentioned at the very beginning here, they do have a website, truthpodcast.net. So check out the Truth Podcast. It is a very intriguing podcast, and I can guarantee you'll be coming back for more. If you love video games, tabletop games, or are generally nerdy, check out cycleanddredge.com and listen to You Died of Dysentery or Nerdspeak. You Died of Dysentery is a weekly podcast that covers a full range of gaming topics, from video games to tabletop games and everything in between. Do you prefer things like Dungeons and Dragons, magic, zombies, Star Wars, or Star Trek? Then listen to Nerdspeak. Nerdspeak is Cycle and Dredge's new all-nerdy show. Subscribe to both You Died of Dysentery and Nerdspeak on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Radio Republic, or anywhere else you find podcasts. Don't forget to visit cycleanddredge.com and enter their monthly giveaways. You can also listen to them directly on the website, too. And, oh yeah, they record live on Discord every Friday night. So don't forget to join their Discord, listen to the live shows, and be a part of the podcast. The Discord link is on the website. Again, it's cycleanddredge.com.